Before we get into today's episode with the amazing Left at London, I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who has reached out to me with your kind messages about my friend Kevin Clark. I really miss him. I'm really sad. I'm still processing things, but I would love to do a tribute episode. I would love to have that come out a week from today, which if you're listening to this today, it is in fact June 4th, I believe. So that would be June 11th. I would love to have the tribute episode to Kevin come out on that day. So go ahead and send me your voice memos or emails if you'd like a message for Kevin to be read on the pod on that day. And with all that said, let's get into today's very chaotic and amazing episode. I'm so excited to be chatting with my friend Nat, who also goes by Left at London. Let's get into it. Welcome, welcome, welcome back to Where Are We Now, a podcast where I, Riv Correas, get to connect, chat, and kiki with folks who came into the spotlight in their childhood years or their teenage years or their late teens. Honestly, it's my show and it is my rules, so I'm kind of like lately wanting to just fuck up the structure quite a bit, but we'll see. I don't know what that noise that just came out of me was. Y'all, it's been a crazy cuckoo day. I am in the guest. Oh my God. Reed, you're going to have to cut some fun stuff out. My producer.
No, keep that in. Keep it in, please.
Okay, my guest is begging us to keep that in. We're going to have to go ahead and keep that in because at Where Are We Now, I believe in... We're already having a great chaotic start to this episode. I cannot wait to get into this. Let's just bring her in. Fuck it. No intro. I'm not going to talk about where I am mentally, physically, or spiritually because honestly... You know what? We'll get into it at another time. Everyone, welcome. You might know her from her iconic Vine presence, her iconic TikTok presence. She's coming out with an album called T-I-A-P-F-Y-H. Please give a warm welcome to Left at London. Pew, 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 pew.
Pew, 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 pew. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for struggling with me through that intro. How are you, BB?
I am doing all right today. God, that intro was great. I don't know what you're talking about, but no, I loved it. I'm doing all right. I just made myself a little vegan egg McMuffin thing.
Ooh.
And she was delicious. And I've been trying to explore making the perfect vegan egg McMuffin, and I think I've perfected it. I think I've gotten it down to a science.
So tell me, what's the science behind it?
The science behind it is you gotta get the good vegan brands of shit. You can't go like half ass with like the fucking Morningstar bacon or some shit. You gotta go full field roast. You gotta go field roast sausage, like the apple and maple, and then you gotta get just egg, and then you like get like some chow cheese. I got the smoked cheddar this time, and I seasoned the just egg with what was it? Garlic salt, everything but the bagel seasoning. Turmeric, Cholula, something else. I don't remember what else I put in it. And then you put the cheese on top, you fold it in half, and then you put it on an English muffin buttered with the Earth Balance, and the shit is fucking good. Shit is okay. fucking great.
You heard it here, folks. Left at London recommends field roast and chow cheese and jest egg and English muffins and everything but the bagel seasoning, even.
Yeah, I love everything but the bagel seasoning. They start I know that like it kind of started, quote unquote. There's probably some other brand that did it first, but then it like started, to my knowledge, with Trader Joe's, but Costco started selling like bulk everything but the bagel seasoning from like a different brand and shit.
Oh my God.
I love putting that shit on popcorn. That's that shit
hot
is
tip.
Great.
Hot tip. I love that seasoning so much. Wait, more.
Okay, hot popcorn takes. So the top three things to put on popcorn. Number one, everything but the bagel seasoning. Second thing, well, this is all like under the guise that it is like a buttered popcorn as opposed to like kettle corn or anything like that. I'm not counting kettle corn just for this list. Number one, everything but the bagel seasoning. Number two, nutritional yeast. And number three, this is going to surprise some people. And I'm not saying like put all these three together. I'm just like ranking them. Number three, this is going to surprise some people, but cinnamon sugar.
I thought you were going to say my thing that I like to do, which is cardamom.
Cardamom. Ooh.
Fancy. Yeah. I like to do a little bit of, there's that one brand. I don't like the name of it because it kind of is diet culture-y. Okay. I'm Demi Lovato. Cancel. like the Himalayan sweetness, flavor of this popcorn. I think it's called guilt-free or something shitty or stupid like that. and they make those like cool like paleo puffs. I don't know if you've ever had those, and they're vegan too, but I like to put a little bit of clarified butter, which is famously not vegan. And I don't claim my veganness. I know we've spoken about this in a group text. And Nat and I are in a thriving group text with some lesbians from the TikTok, which is how we met. I do identify as plant-based. And then sometimes when somebody's like, hey, I have Filipino food, there's pork in it, I'm like, okay, I'll take it. But for the most part,
I actually made like this really good, vegan Filipino dish, with, black beans instead of pork's blood.
Oh my God. That sounds incredible.
And it like came from like a vegan Filipino specific website. So it wasn't like some white woman trying to do it. Like, so I was like very thankful for that. Cause it was actually like a really good dish and yeah, it's really good. Then there was something about the popcorn that you said that that made me think
cardamom.
Cardamom, yeah. I wanted to ask you what your favorite herb or spice was.
Ooh, definitely I think rosemary would be my favorite. Is it yours?
Our God is an awesome God.
He reigns from heaven above. Our God is an awesome God. we never did that because I never went to like a Christian school. I went to a Catholic school where for the choir, I'll never forget this. We sang like, Oh Happy Day, from Sister Act, like at church. That was tight. And I'm Jewish, but I mean, Sister Act is part of my, spiritual makeup. But particularly Sister Act 2, Electric Boogaloo.
I don't care what religion you are. Switchfoot had some bangers. We all know this.
Was Switchfoot a Christian band?
You didn't know?
I had no idea.
Switchfoot was very... you knew about the Flyleaf song that's like explicitly Christian as well, right?
I know about Flyleaf. I had no idea about Switchfoot. Wait.
Switchfoot, yeah. Hold on. Let me go to my Switchfoot playlist. I don't have a Switchfoot playlist, but I have
what song? Wait, what? I can't think of any Switchfoot songs at the moment.
Let me see here.
Oh my God, I'm obsessed with this. I'm obsessed with finding out bands are secretly Christian.
Yeah, we were meant to live for so much
that's
more.
Them.
Yeah, that's them.
You know what? I second guessed myself because I thought that was Hoobastank, Are Hoobastank also Christian?
I hope not.
I don't think so. I just will never forget Hoobastank playing that song. I'm not a perfect person. I saw them live at some concert, and it was actually a Hoobastank concert that I saw them live at that I went to. and I remember when they were doing that song, The Reason, the lead singer goes, and the reason is, and he pointed at the audience, and nobody like really expected that to happen, and nobody was singing along. So everyone was kind of like, yeah, just like on a like 30-second delay.
People were on, people were entranced by the stank of the Hoob.
Oh my God. So before you came on, I went on a like binge of your TikToks, which is how I originally
saw in my notifications.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, it was so funny because I was just like, all right, we're about to prepare for the podcast. Oh, and there they are. Okay. There they are. Every single notification. It was great.
I'm so sorry.
Don't apologize. Don't apologize. It was cute. I liked it.
In that case, I wanted to say, because I remember seeing the haha, I do that Vine. So if anyone listening is like, okay, who is this person? Like, why are they specifically on this show? Is because when, can I call you Nat? Or would you like me to call you Lyft?
Go ahead.
Okay. So Nat is the haha, I do that Vine, is the face behind the haha, I do that Vine, which was memed the house down, and just the world instantly just knew who they were or who she was. And like, I don't know. I just remember desperately wanting to be Vine famous, but then like not being like funny or quick enough to like make anything happen. Like I would like be in Chicago on the train and just like start singing randomly and nobody would react, because that's like pretty normal in Chicago. Because I was trying to get these like reactions out of people and nobody gave a fuck. So I want to say thank you for making some of the funniest finds that I can remember. And I also wanted to ask you, like, if people like in Seattle will like recognize you from that.
Okay, so there's a couple of things that I want to mention. There are three specific things that I want to mention. Number one, the haha I do that Vine is particularly funny to me because, like, not like funny haha, but like funny, like strange, because everybody remembers it as haha I do that. And there's like sort of a Mandela effect, I guess, because there's three ha's and
oh my
everybody
God.
Calls it the haha I do that. But like, if you think about it, if you try to like recollect it, it's three ha's. And even I say, haha, I do that when I'm referencing it, just because I don't have time for all three ha's.
Nobody has time for three ha's. Okay, sorry. Like, put a pin in that. I want to say, like, I just learned about Mandela effects very recently.
Yeah.
They make me violently ill. Like, I, thinking about certain Mandela effects, like, I'm just like, it's gut-wrenching. Like, the Berenstain Bears, are you fucking kidding me?
Have you heard about the Mandela effect that was like, what was it? It was Sinbad in a movie called Shazam, and people were like, oh, are you confusing it with the Shaq movie Kazam? And people were like, no, I remember it coming
around
at the same time.
No, it was Sinbad.
Okay, so here's the thing. Sinbad himself was like, I was never in a movie where I played a genie. So what they did, this was so fucking, okay, so first of all, sorry for making you violently ill, but secondly, the funny thing about this was like College Humor, I think it was like for April Fool's Day, around that time that Shazam started like getting popular again as a Mandela effect sort of thing, they made a fake scene from that movie like they like recreated it, quote unquote, where they had Sinbad, the actual Sinbad, playing a genie. And they even had reference to like a bunch of other Mandela effects. They had like the Fruit Loops box with the alternate spelling. They had like,
what? Wait, hold on. What is the Fruit Loops thing?
How do you spell Fruit Loops? How do you spell Fruit Loops?
It's F-R-O-O-T loops, L-O-O-P-S. Are you about to tell me it's F-R-U-I-T, regular fruit?
Okay, so, no, you're right, but there are people who specifically remember it as F-R-U-I-T.
Okay, well, that's weird.
Yeah, and then there was like a fake newspaper that was like, Nelson Mandela dies in prison, like in the background of one of the scenes. It was such a fucking good video, and it just gave me so much joy that like that existed. But I saw a really interesting article around that same time that Mandela Effect was like becoming like a really, like it was like coming back into the public consciousness. And I saw one particular article where it was this guy who made fake IMDb articles for seasons like 2 through 4 of some like shark themed animated show. I would have to look extensively into this, but like he was a kid and like would just like make up like plots of this shark themed animated show. Even said that Henry Winkler played like one of the sharks or something like that, like when they were like either a kid or a teen. Yeah. And so they did all this and ended up like catching on. Like, I can't find any episodes of this show anywhere. Did it even exist? And like, but I specifically remember Henry Winkler being in the show, and like he was like, no, that was me as a teen or kid or something like that, just entering shit onto IMDb. So he like kind of talked about like the science of the Mandela effect and shit like that. It was really interesting.
Yeah. Oh my God. That is infuriating. I think they're like, yeah. I think the reason why the guttural reaction that I had from them, like the one that really, really pissed me off was I have gone so long thinking the line was mirror, mirror on the wall. And the Evil Queen actually says magic mirror on the wall in Snow White. It's never been mirror, mirror, but people have recreated that mirror, mirror on the wall. I'm thinking specifically of like Bibi Zahara-Benet in season 3 of All Stars on Drag Race, opening her iconic verse to the Hey Kitty Girl finale number with mirror, mirror on the wall. And it's not that, it's never been that. And that just,
oh,
like,
you know what's another one that's like that? You don't want to know?
Oh God,
another one
I don't know if
like
I
that?
Can handle this. I don't know if I can handle this. I have trust issues.
Okay. Are you a fan of I Love Lucy? Have you like watched I Love Lucy?
Not since I was a kid.
Okay, but you've seen it.
Yes. Oh my God, what are you about to tell me?
Do you remember Desi Arnaz's character, Ricky Ricardo, ever saying the phrase, Lucy, you got some splaining to do?
Yes.
He never said that. In the show, he never said it.
I think I'm going to throw up. I'm going to throw up. I'm literally going to throw up. That's disgusting. It's disgusting.
You can look it up. You can watch every single episode. He never said it.
He never said, Lucy, you got some splaining to do.
Not
where did that fucking
time.
Come from then? I need America, world, listeners, like, where did that come from? I'm hurt. I'm upset. I don't know if I can finish this episode. I'm just kidding.
Okay. So I said that I had 3 things.
Yes, you did.
Number
back
2.
To the-
Number 2, I want to just point out that this is like, if there's anybody, hold on, I got to text my girlfriend real quick. She's on the plane.
Oh, girlfriend, even.
Yeah. But, okay. So, second thing that I wanted to mention was, this is the only time I have allowed myself to be in an interview in which I mentioned my Vine shit, because like at least it's like prefaced in the like series's fucking like concept. There will be so many times. There has been so many fucking times where I will like be interviewed for my music and they'll like mention Vine, and I'm like, why? Why do you do that?
I 100% feel you on that. I relate in that, like, I was doing a podcast a couple weeks ago and I had so much fun doing it, and I don't feel any animosity like about this at all. But like it was about navigating like love addiction as a queer person. And we went through an entire episode where we didn't talk about School of Rock for a second. And then at the like last minute, somebody was just like, so you were in the movie School of Rock. And I was just like, dang, I really thought we were going to make it through an entire episode without mentioning it. But I think it's probably just the fact that I had that thought was what made the host of that show like remember. But it was fine. It ended up being a great episode. And if you're listening and you want to check out that episode, it's called, the podcast is called Dyking Out. And it's an incredible podcast hosted by two New York comedians, and they have amazing guests on the show, myself included. They also had Alison Bechdel on, Mackenzie Lansing from Mayor of Easttown, which if you haven't watched it yet, I mean, trigger warning, it's like extremely traumatic and like a lot. But I just binged it in 2 days, which is probably bad for my mental health. But oh, my goodness. Anyways. Yes. So sorry. You were saying.
That was it for the second thing. I don't remember the third thing. What were we talking about?
Fuck. We were talking about ha ha ha. Famously ha ha ha. I do that.
Yeah.
And the Vine of it all. And I think I asked you like if people like will recognize you out and about in Seattle.
Yes. That's what you ask. So I actually had a really interesting interaction with somebody on Tinder a while back, which was like I explicitly put in my bio, if you recognize me from the internet, please say so. Because I hate it when people, there have been people that I've been on like one or two dates with and they won't reveal that they've like known my work until like midway through date one or after date two or something like that. And it just always makes me uncomfortable. So it's like, I have that as a boundary. And sometimes it wields like really interesting results because some people, like this one person recognized me from my Death Grips Vine, my lasagna Death Grips Vine. If you
remember my God. One. Yes. I remember that one. Oh my God. Just the N at the end.
Yeah. And we just talked about like Death Grips for like 20 minutes after that. And I felt it felt like I was back in like the 2015 trans girl scene. Like it was a blast from the past.
Oh my God. I don't like it when people wait till we're hanging out to like announce that they know me from School of Rock or from Bring the Funny or any of my other like projects. It's, let's be real, it's mostly School of Rock or TikTok now. But like, yeah, I don't know. It just feels like kind of, I can't explain why it's uncomfortable, but it just is. I don't know.
I think it's just like, okay. So I think the way that like the specific discomfort that I feel about that is that like, how do I explain it? It's like taking your shoes off and then like somebody going like, by the way, the carpet is sopping wet. Like after you've taken your shoes off.
That is uncomfortable. Wow.
Like, oh my God. Like I don't mind if the carpet is like being cleaned and like it's still like wet from that. But I need to know before I take my shoes off because otherwise my socks are going to get soaked.
It would be nice to know. It, to me, another way I think of it would be like if I was to like be like, hey, catch, and I throw you a medicine ball. Like,
no!
That's how I feel that interaction, that type of interaction feels. Where it's like, oh, by the way, like, I'm a big fan of School of Rock. Like, when we're, like, 2 hours into a date. Because famously, dates with lesbians are longer than an hour. Yeah.
Okay, question here. Have you ever been on, like, a date or, like, hanging out with a new friend and they genuinely did not know that you were in School of Rock until it somehow came up and they were like, wait, are you... What? Hold on.
Yes.
Because that happens to me sometimes. And like, for some reason, that's like endearing. But I want to know what your opinion is on that.
I love when it happens like that. It's so fucking cute.
Yeah. I had a friend of mine recently, like, I posted on like I vented on my close friend's story on Instagram, like whenever somebody says, like, you look like the guy from the haha, I do that Vine, I die a little inside or something like that. And my friends, who y'all might recognize as More Kismet, great electronic artists, check them out, please. But they were like, what? You don't even look like him. And I was like, bro, I hate to tell you this. Actually, I love to tell you this. And like, they were like shocked. They were stunned.
Yeah. It
was absolutely adorable. Absolutely adorable.
Yeah. I like the, when people say I didn't put two and two together and now it makes so much sense. Like that I like. And I don't know. Yeah. I like when friendships grow organically rather than people kind of like, I hate this phrase and there needs to be a better way to say it, but like pussyfooting around, like the thing, like it's like not calling out the elephant in the room. Like, you know,
do you know what the origin of pussyfooting around is? I don't know either. I just am wondering if you do.
I don't know, but it sounds unsanitary and slippery, and I don't like it.
I'm sorry. I just imagine, like, somebody saying, like, I don't want to pussyfoot around here, and then all of a sudden, like, Quentin Tarantino just, like, turns his head and is like, what? What did you say?
And two pussies just like growing out of somebody's foot. Like, I don't know.
Gross.
I know. That's like, that's where I go. See, that's where I go. That's why I shouldn't actually have a platform. but for some reason, they give it to me. So you're an amazing musician. I devoured some of your music recently. I was telling Nat that I was like, I had a Sydney Gish radio on Spotify and this like beautiful song comes on and I'm hearing this buttery voice, this charming, like great lyrics. And I'm just like, oh, who the fuck is this? And then I like open my phone to Now Playing. And of course it's Left at London. Revolutionary Lover, even. Revolution Lover, my bad. And like,
it's, you're not the only one that gets that wrong. For some reason, like,
it's another Mandela effect.
It's a Mandela effect. It's just, I'm the queen of having Mandela effects about me, I guess. I got at least two.
The title of this episode is going to be Queen of Mandela Effects for sure.
I love that. Yo, I want to just like, side note, I want to give you a taste of what this, do you know when this episode's going to come out?
It'll come out next Friday.
Next Friday. Oh, that'll be the exact release date of Tiapfu. My album. Shit. Okay. Fuck. Okay. I want to send you track 6. Here, I'm gonna send it to you in the chat. I want to get your reaction on this.
Okay. So let's talk about Tiapfu. How are you pronouncing?
Tiapfu. Tiapfu is how I pronounce it.
Tiapfu. This album is called TIAPFYH. Are you allowed to tell us what it stands for?
I have been telling y'all what it stands for. Nobody's noticed. It's crazy. But like, I literally on the website, leftinlondon.com/TIAPFYH, where it like shows like all the info about the album and shit like that. There's a track list and track 3 is called There Is a Place for You Here. And track 7 is called This Is a Protest for Your Heart. That's why it's an acronym, is because it stands for two different things.
Oh my God. So you heard it here, folks. There is a place for you here, and this is a protest for your heart. Those are two incredible acronyms. I love that so much.
It's actually funny. I want to, let me make sure that I get this name right. Because what happened was, I posted like new album's going to be called, and then I posted the acronym and people were like, what does it mean? The first person to guess what it was, guessed it correctly. It was There Is a Place for You Here. That was the original title of the album. It was just going to be that. And like the first person guessed it. And then later on, like people kept on guessing because I didn't want to say that like a person got it right. But somebody guessed This Is a Protest for Your Heart. And I DM'd them and I was like, yo, that's actually a brilliant title. Can I use that? And this person was like, yeah, hell yeah. And so shouts out Mitchell Angelo for that title. I also put Mitchell's name in the credits, the liner notes of the album. But the fact that's that like incredible. It ended up like happening that way, like during the process of making the album was just, because it's funny because I wanted there to so This Is a Protest for Your Heart. And the album's out. So if you want like references for what these tracks sound like, pause this episode, listen to it. It's a quick listen. It's like 35 minutes and then come back because I want you to have the context. So track 7, This Is a Protest for Your Heart, is like, that was a song that I worked on before the song, There's a Place for You Here. I thought There's a Place for You Here was going to be a completely different song that I also didn't have a title for. And then I ended up making a song that sounded way fucking better. And I was just like, well, I'm gonna just use this one instead for the title. So it ended up working out really well. And then I finished There's a Place for You Here. Or no, I finished This Is a Protest for Your Heart. And then I was like, you know, I can just give it that title and then like make the acronym like obviously one of the two. I was like considering all this sort of things with like branding and stuff like that. And I ended up just like throwing it all out the window and just like, I'm going to call it this like inscrutable acronym. Let's fucking go.
I love it. I love it so much. I'm addicted to acronyms. I share a lot of acronyms in my life. Like my favorite, I think this is a new one that I've recently started hearing and using is LOVE stands for letting others voluntarily evolve. And I really like that. That gives me nice butterflies in my tummy, in my tum-tum. And another one is fear standing for false evidence appearing real. That one really does it for me. But I love an acronym. when I was in a band called Sweet Revenge, terrible band, decent band name, we had a song called PTSWS, which stood for post-traumatic songwriting syndrome. And the like lead guitarist of the band wrote the song about the girl that he went to prom with. It was like a whole thing. PTSWS, and that lyric was never in the song ever. It just had a cheeky title. But
both
I love a good
of those
acronym.
Titles, by the way, are not in the song lyrics. So I feel you with the not putting the. Yeah, hold on. I think most of these songs don't have the. Okay, track 1 has the title in the song as a lyric. Track 2 doesn't. Track 3 doesn't. Track 4 does. Track 5 does. Track 6 and 7 don't. So, yeah, majority of this album is song titles that have nothing to do with the song. Well, not nothing, but nothing to do with the song lyrics.
Love that so much.
I love that phenomenon.
I love it. I love a good song title that isn't in the song. I think like a lot of like pop punk bands like do that constantly. Like I definitely see that a lot with like Fall Out Boy, etc. I love it so much.
Speaking of Fall Out Boy, so essentially I found out about this a couple months ago, forgot about it, and found myself talking about it in my TikTok drafts. And I've decided it wasn't going to be a good TikTok, so I didn't post it. But I feel like it's an interesting story nonetheless. Did you know that Kanye West made a remix of This Ain't a Scene, It's a Goddamn Arms Race that was, like, officially released?
I did not know that. I had no idea.
It was, like, during, like, I think Kanye's graduation era and like right after This Ain't a Scene came out. But the first, so Kanye has a verse in it because he was like, you know, fuck it. I'll put a verse in this song. And the first line in his verse is, "Now I don't know what the hell this song is talking about. Do you?" Like, he straight up admitted it.
I love that. I love Kanye for that. I love him for that.
Yeah. Go Kanye. Goofy. You did that right.
Goofy. That's so goofy. I want to ask you, because you're so good at the impressions are incredible. I devoured your Frank Ocean and Tyler, the Creator videos before we met today. And I remember having seen them, you know, when they first dropped on Twitter and blew up like that. But I just watching them again, it gave me so much joy. And now it's kind of become this trend on TikTok for people to be like, I'm going to make a Lana Del Rey song, or I'm going to make a song by Lorde, or I'm going to make a song by Phoebe Bridgers. But I want everyone to know that, like, you were the first. Like, you were the trends. You're the tastemaker. You're the trends tastemaker, honey.
I feel like don't get me wrong. There's probably people who did it before me. Like, I probably, like, am forgetting some people who did it before me. But there was a huge fucking, like, boost of those types of videos after I did mine, to the point where I didn't even want to do those videos anymore, because I was like, these guys got it. I set a precedent, and I'm fine with not adding to that part of the culture anymore. Just like that part of internet culture anymore. I'm just like chill with it. I mean, occasionally I'll make like a blank type beat. There was one time I did try to make a new one. And it was like 90s, like I was trying to make it specifically just like a 90s R&B slash like a TLC type song, you know, with like the MIDI acoustic guitar and shit, like pretty much like a No Scrubs type beat. And yes. I made the song, and I was literally like, okay, I'm drawing the line here. I'm not releasing this video specifically because I want to like sell this beat to somebody. Because it was
oh my god, really fucking send it good. To me. I need to hear it. Because I'm in the market for some new type beats.
I actually found somebody who like is like working on the song with me, but I will send that to you. Just remind me after this. It's so
oh my god.
It's so fucking funny how much it sounds like a 90s R&B song, or it sounds like it's sort of like that era where it's like TLC No Scrubs to like JoJo's Leave Get Out, like that. Ugh, sort of
that's my that sweet sort of spot vibe. That's where I thrive musically. That's like where I feel like I was like the most invested in music at the time, and JoJo and TLC and everyone in between, kind of like 3LW is another favorite of mine. Like No More Baby I'm a Do Right will always be like canonically my favorite song from that era.
Canonically?
And also
I love how there's no other word for consistently true of a real person. Like canonically is the best word that we have, and it's only like definitionally like relevant to like fictional characters, but we just sort of like reclaimed it as non-fictional humans.
Yeah. It's so true. It is so true that we've done that. Oh my gosh. But yeah, like that era of music is like where I want to create from, and I like would love to like write from that place of like eighth grader, like, sadness about everything. Like, there's literally a line in the song, No More Baby I'm a Do Right, where it's, "You promised me a Kate Spade, but that was last year, boy, in the eighth grade." Like, that is truly one of the most iconic lyrics I've ever heard in my entire life, and I will be creating from that place. But I want to know, and this I think is a good segue into the question that I like to ask my guests, and I'll always ask this question to my guests because it is the reason why I started this show, is who was your Matilda?
Who was your Matilda?
I ask this question because when I first saw the movie Matilda, I had this sense of like, I feel seen by her. I don't know what it is. At the time, I didn't know what it is. Now I know that it's because she had magical powers and she had a dysfunctional family. And I really related to that. And I was also obsessed with my second grade teacher in a way that kind of mirrored the Miss Honey relationship. But I want to know first who your Matilda was musically, and then also who your other Matilda, who we've already kind of talked about a little bit before we started recording. Not to put you on the spot.
Okay, so I'm going to start with the one that I thought about, because I didn't think about like who would be my Matilda musically, but I would say that the Matilda for me was Abed from Community, just like a very neurodivergent, like outsider trying his best. Like I feel it. And I just like loved his energy and like ability to connect regardless of like he had like this simultaneous like ability to connect with people as well as like an inability to connect with people that was very, I felt very seen by that. And then as far as musically goes, if I had to think about it, that one's harder because that like, I feel like I don't remember what I was listening to as a kid. I was listening to a lot of classic rock. Yeah. But like, I don't remember what I was listening to as like a middle schooler. Or like I remember what I was listening to in high school. I remember the three main groups that I was listening to. Groups or artists were, four actually. Death Grips, Childish Gambino, Little Teeth, and The Avalanches.
Amazing. I love that.
Killer lunch. Killer lineup would that be? I don't know why I talked like Yoda there.
A killer lineup.
Killer lineup would that be?
Whoa. Okay. Absolute slay. Spot on Yoda impression. One of my mentors always says, do or do not, there is no try to me, which I believe is a Yoda-ism.
That's 100% a Yoda-ism.
She calls herself a student of Yoda. It's really cute. I love that. Childish Gambino is probably one of my musical Matildas too. I just love his lyrics and his writing and all of that. But I definitely see that too.
I was specifically obsessed with like the Because the Internet era. And sorry that I keep on interrupting you. It's like the Wi-Fi is slow here.
No, it's totally fine.
But I kept on like listening to 3005 to the point where I was like, well, I just might as well listen to the whole album. And I did, and I was blown away. And then I've been a fan of post-royalty mixtape Gambino specifically ever since. I appreciate Camp and the things before, but it just doesn't hit the same for me as like royalty to like Awaken My Love, that string of albums and mixtapes and EPs were just gorgeous, just absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, truly stunning. And there's that connection too with Donald Glover and Abed from Community, played by Danny Pudi. That show Community, I didn't watch it when it was out, but then it became a pandemic favorite of mine because it was just such an easy binge. And it, when it came to Netflix, I was really excited to just like watch it. And I like watched every episode very like, honestly, I can't watch TV like a normal person. Like I have to watch it alcoholically where I'm just like binging it. It is like a issue for me that I've like been working on a lot, like with numbing out with TV, but we're getting there. We're trying our best. Another Mandela effect, which I've been recently watching Sex and the City again, unfortunately. Terrible, terrible show. But I mean, can't help it, but love my girls. Another one I found out was that a lot of people thought it was Sex in the City, and it's never been that. It's Sex and the City.
I just remember like that type of thing where it's like it's very easily misheard. Like reminds me of like that one meme that's like party rockers in the house tonight. It's party rock is like like that specific meme. Have you not seen that meme, or did you not know that it was not Party Rockers?
Both. I haven't seen the meme and I didn't know it was okay, so it's not Party Rockers. Wow.
It's Party
okay.
Rock is in the house tonight. Wow, we're acting out the meme in real life.
We're literally acting it out. Oh my God. Wow. Life becomes art and art becomes life. And that's the beauty of this pod, even. I can't even believe that. Wow. This has been, I think, probably the most like upset I've ever been in my entire life. Like just like learning all of these things. Like, wow, we wow. I like yeah,
you're
fully
welcome.
there. Thank you. You know what? Hey, actually, thank you. The next question I want to ask about your album is like, okay, so this is your debut album, which is tight. You've released
yes.
EPs before, and singles and whatnot, but this is your first official debut album. Was it self-produced?
Okay. So it was mostly self-produced. Let me look at the track list real quick to make sure that I'm giving every guest producer their flowers. But okay. Big help. So besides Jamvis, America Loves Me, Chuck Sutton, and Peter Cooley helping with the mixing and mastering, Pills and Good Advice, I want to thank, I would just give like a quick rundown of like how different people helped on each track. Cause it's only seven tracks, but number one, track one, Laura Less, Will Toledo, and Ashley Nine Lives. Thank God for those three. Number two, Vera Much, Sophia Conant, Lillian Davis. Thank God for those three. Number three, Alex Anderson of Floral Tattoo and Stevie Knipe of Adult Mom, and my cat Davido, who inspired the song. Track four, special thanks to Rohan, Vera again. Rohan's going by the artist name Rose Catalyst now. Number five, It Could Be Better. That was a Peter Cooley, More Kismet, Chromenichi bass track. Track six, Kudzu, I got a sample from Willie Crooks, great artist, love his stuff. And for Pills and Good Advice and Kudzu, I got drum loops from Nick Villamizar. I've never actually heard his name pronounced, so Nick, if you're listening, please correct me if I got it wrong. But number seven, I had help from Fixel and Lunamatic, and all those people. Oh, and the bonus track on digital was mixed on the very day that I was releasing it, like not the very day that I was releasing it, but the very day that I was uploading it, by Justin Summit, S-U-M-M-E-T. Thank God for that guy. Because I would have been fucking screwed without him. But yeah, I think every single track was self-produced, but like not every track like had a lot of help from like a lot of people. And I feel like this is a very collaborative album, even though that there's like no listed features, which is like, I feel like I want to like do more of that type of stuff where I'm like collaborating a little bit more freely with people, and just like I aspire to like work on shit beyond just like myself. Like I have a bunch of beats in the back burner that like I can't fucking sing over because like they're 100% like these are meant for like a rapper to go on, and so I've been trying to like workshop those around and tell a couple friends like, hey, what do you think of this beat, and people like them, so that's good.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That sounds like so much love has gone into this album, and that's just fucking incredible. Honestly,
100%.
Yeah. It really shows like how like it truly does take a village to like make
yeah.
beautiful art, and I can't wait to listen to it and devour it. Keep on using that when I'm talking about art. Is like, I keep on saying I'm devouring this art. I'm devouring this TV show. I'm devouring this music. I'm devouring this show or whatever. And I wonder what that's about. I mean, I do connect with art in a very like, I don't know. Like, I want it to be part of me. Like, I absorb it. I feel like I'm definitely like a sponge for creation, and I, you know, take in a lot, and devouring just feels like I'm just, it's such a, I don't know. That's such like a hot word to me that it feels good to say, like, I'm devouring this TV show.
Even if it's like a shitty show. Art is the way that we like connect, like art is the way that we connect to ourselves and others, right? Like that's one of the main ways, like because art is a form of communication. And if we think of it that way, then it's like art is an alternative form of communication that some people, especially I feel like neurodivergent folks, connect with on a way that on like a wavelength that like is hard to understand for everybody, you know? Like I have a lyric in one of my songs that's like, nobody's life makes perfect sense to everyone. And I feel like art is one way to, art is so interpretable that it's easier to make sense of people's lives if they are making art, even if it's like, even if it's art that like people dislike. I've been starting to realize that there is a lot of value in quote unquote bad art. And that shit is just so like, I don't know, like trashy shit is fun, you know? And like, it helps you actively understand like, why do you dislike this thing? Why do you like this thing? You start understanding more about yourself and you start being able to communicate more, whether it's in the language of art or in the language of your choosing, you start being able to communicate a little bit better because that you understand what you like, what you dislike, what you can focus on, what kind of bores you, et cetera, et cetera. And it helps you understand yourself, which is why art is such a unique form of communication, because that like it happens in all forms of communication, like understanding what you like and dislike, but it's very like a conversation can go on and have no necessary purpose, like no like overarching, like, hey, how's the weather over there? Like, it's fine, you know, like that's like a boring conversation, but like you can like gauge stuff from that. But art is like, that could be a scene in a movie and you can be like, oh, this is important because of this or that, or this wasn't important to the movie. I don't know why they included it, et cetera, et cetera. And you start understanding a little bit more about like your style of communication and why you prefer certain styles of communication over others. Art is just like a beautiful, beautiful fucking way to understand oneself, or even like understand less about yourself. Like zooming out the camera a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wow, art is communication. I love that so much. Are you a Gemini?
Shut up. What the fuck?
Are you? Yeah. That makes sense. Like, you know, the way that you talk about communication, it makes a lot of sense. Because, like, Gemini is ruled by the planet of Mercury, which is the planet of communication. And I was getting big Mercury energy from that last tidbit there.
I have the most Gemini in my chart of, like, most of my friends.
Really? My mom is a triple Gemini.
Let me try to find my chart. This shit is messy as fuck.
Oh my god, let's get into it.
People have literally looked at my fucking chart and been like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like multiple people. It's so fucking funny.
I'm honored to be kind of balanced out. Like I have a lot of air and air and fire in my thing, but I can't see it too well. Wait, so I'm getting very bad visual quality. Okay. Can you just tell me?
Sun, Gemini, Moon, Leo, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Gemini. what else is in here is Gemini? I got a Sagittarius rising.
That's cool. That's really well. So you're air fire fire, and I'm also fire air fire. That's interesting that your sun and your rising are opposite each other on the chart. But I feel like your sense of humor is very like chaotic, like a Sagittarius. So that makes so much fucking sense. Oh my God. I love finding this. I love finding out people's charts. And it was like weird. I like was on a date the other day and this person was like, are you into astrology? And I was just like, no, not really. But it's like, no, Riv, like that was a fucking lie. Like I'm very into astrology. I know like far too much about it to not say that I'm into it.
You know more about astrology than I do. I don't know how to read this chart. I just like read it off and be like, well, fingers crossed. I sent you my chart, by the way. So you have my chart now. Yes,
so I can look at it and I can send you little voice memos every once in a while just being like, hey, are you micromanaging situations today? I love doing that. I love doing that for my friends.
I love that.
I call them little check-ins. I call them little check-ins or wrist slaps, depending on what the person seems like they need. Yeah. Speaking of check-ins, I would love to ask you if you could imagine a younger version of yourself, maybe when you were like a teenager and you were like reaching that Vine fame and all that, and looking at her and what would you say to that version of yourself? What would you say to little you? What would you say to little you?
Know what you want, question what you want, and criticize what you want. Because if you don't, you're going to drive yourself fucking crazy.
Did you do a lot of that? Like, or not? Did you not do a lot of that? Is that why?
So I have this sort of theory that, and I'm glad that I can discuss it on a show about like being in the spotlight, either like at one time or continually, because like, no matter what happens, if you are put into a public spotlight unexpectedly, it fucks you up. It fucks you up, in my opinion. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And because it, like, humans are very ego driven and fame and the pursuit of it or the acquiring of it is very much an ego driven sort of thing. And I'm not saying necessarily that that's like inherently 100% bad. It's just a fact to me. And like, I feel like if I knew more about like being able to question why I wanted certain reactions from people, I would be able to like navigate, I would be able to navigate things a lot better, and like being able to navigate like how I can access the parts of me that like a large audience likes without feeding into like, without feeding into that as a coping mechanism specifically. Like trying to get the attention and the validation and stuff like that as a coping mechanism for whatever's going on in here.
Yeah.
That shit would like, and like, it's something that I still struggle with. And I think that anybody in that position will struggle with just like periodically, even people that aren't in that position. I've known a lot of people who like have like question their ego or their like narcissistic side and shit like that, and it's really hard to confront that side because that like the way that you can confront that side, there's two ways to confront that side: with nuance or with like self-deprecation. And self-deprecation, somebody pointed out to me this like what like I was having the worst high of one of my, like, the worst high of my life, one of them. And during that time, like, we were just talking about really serious shit. And at one point, they said the phrase, like, I'm constantly, like, and I might be getting this wrong, so if you're listening, then correct me if I'm wrong here, but, like, they said, like, I doubt myself, and I feel like I hate myself, but if I'm thinking about myself that much, then I must be pretty obsessed with myself. Mm-hmm. And that was interesting, because I never thought of self-deprecation as an act of ego, but it kind of is like self, in, like, a very...
I see it as being self-obsessed. Yeah. I see it as being self-obsessed for sure. Like, I remember auditioning for to be a tour guide at Universal Studios recently, and I was doing well, and then I made a joke at my own expense, and I was, you know, I remember the thought leading up to making that joke, and it was an improvised thing, like, and the thought was, oh, this is gonna kill, because they love seeing, like, AFAB people who fucking hate themselves. And I was just like in it for that, like that bit. And of course, I don't hate myself. I actually love myself quite a bit. And like for me to make that self-deprecating joke for a job, for, you know, people to like me, for the validation, it reads as inauthentic. And of course, I didn't book the job. So it's like that is like a major lesson that, you know, I've been learning, is that like self-deprecation, like, typically for me, at least now, you know, 3 years sober and all that, like, is honestly dishonest because I do love myself and I have no reason to fish for pity or anything like that. But like, I don't know. I think that self-deprecating humor works in some cases, but it's cheap and, you know, there are better ways to make people laugh. At least for me, that's never been the way that I've gotten people to make, to laugh. But that's at least my sense of humor. But again, like, there are some comics who do self-deprecating really, really well. I know I'm not one of them.
It's not even just like self-deprecating humor. It's just like, sometimes it's just like the literal act of like hating yourself. It's a weird thing to think of, because I'm not saying that people who hate themselves are selfish people, like, because I have been in moments, I've been in huge fucking moments where I've just, like, with every fiber of my being, just, like, absolutely despised myself. But what I'm saying by that, like, what I'm saying by saying, like, the ego connects with self-deprecation and self-loathing and stuff like that is more so just, like, if you, the general you, don't actively, like, if you criticize yourself more than other people criticize you, you are being obsessive about certain aspects of yourself. Mm-hmm. Whether or not that, like, critiquing yourself in order to build a better you, that's a great thing. That's not what I'm trying to say here. I'm trying to say, like, if you are just, like, wallowing in the self-pity, that does nothing for, like, it does nothing for anybody, but the most nothing it does is for you. That sentence is confusing, but, like, I hope that, like, it translates.
No, it does translate. I think that, I think in terms of, like, and this is going to get really spiritual here for just a second, but I like to see everyone, all people, including myself, from a I'll call it a God's eye view. Like, I, instead of like seeing it from the human point of view where I get resentful and judgmental and fearful and angry and intolerant and impatient with people, I try to see things from like a humble place of like, you know, this is just like another, you know, soul that happens to exist in this physical form and they're doing the best with what they've got. And even though their tools might not look like mine, my tools are maybe sharper than theirs, or their tools are sharper than mine, and I'm jealous of that. Like, I can't look at things from the human place as much, even though I am innately human, and I will occasionally have these moments of unforgiving and of judgment and of, like, you know, just toxic, like, thinking patterns, and sometimes I will go into self-loathing or self-pity, but instead of like doing what I want to do, which is like taking it to the internet and like making a joke at my own expense, or, you know, acting out of like a resentment and gossiping about somebody in spite of them, is I have to do the thing that somebody who might like believe in a power greater themselves would do, which is like not do that and not gossip and not go inward and hate on myself. Which, you know, it's just opposite action. You know, after you have those like initial thoughts of like destruction, at least for me, that's been helpful.
I find it really interesting that like you were talking about like a quote unquote God's eye view, because that I feel like the question of what would you tell your younger self is sort of like a retelling of the, of like a God's eye view, like trying to see that perspective, because nobody has the ability to communicate with the past self except for like some sort of like spirit, like it would have to be a spiritual act in order to do that. And I feel like that God's eye view sort of thing, like really puts that particular question into like a specific, like you put stuff into a specific perception, because that like, or no, not perception, perspective, because if you're looking at yourself from the past and you can criticize yourself in the past in order to give them advice to like improve themselves in the future, you're doing it to yourself too. And that's like kind of what you were describing with like the looking at it from a God's eye view. And like, I don't know if you agree with this, because like I know somewhat about like the aspects of your spirituality, but I don't know like necessarily all the specifics. It seems like a complicated spirituality, as should most people's be. So there are two, like in my like general like spiritual thoughts, not practice, because I don't really practice spirituality all that much, even though that I feel like I should be a little bit more like connected with my surroundings. Mm-hmm. The two beliefs that sort of like are my core of that are, number one, God is synonymous with the universe. Like the two are the same. Like, and mm-hmm. in that way, we are aspects of God. Not saying that I am God, but I am like a small part of God. Not an insignificant part, just a small one.
Mm-hmm. And, well, yeah, like, I believe that deep down in every person and place and thing is that fundamental idea of good orderly direction, which is God. I have 1,000 acronyms for God, because I work with a lot of untreated addicts who like don't want to believe in God. And I'll just throw them acronyms just to like pick one that like works for them. And if they can't fuck with any of those acronyms, I just let them pick their own higher power. Like the universe is one of mine for sure. I'll say universe, I'll say spirit, I'll say source, I'll say higher power, HP for short. Right now the version of my higher power that I'm working with is a dominatrix who, like, I have consented to everything that this dominatrix is doing for me. And I'm seeing things as they're happening for me, not happening to me. Like, because when I start to, you know, I lost a very good friend yesterday. And like, you know, when I look at that as like, God, why are you doing this to me? It's actually like not what it is at all. It's like, this is happening for me, even though it sucks, even though, you know, loss and grief and pain and all of the trauma, it all sucks, but it's happening for me.
What do you mean by happening for you specifically?
It's happening to show me a lesson. Not a lesson like you did a bad thing and now you're going to be... It's either going to show me a lesson, a blessing, or some combination of the both of those things.
There was a TikTok that I saw where it was like this like older Italian guy. I'm not sure if you've seen this, but it was like this older Italian guy with a cigarette, and he was, I don't remember his name, so I'm going to go with the stereotypical Tony here. But he was like, Tony's life lesson of the day. In school, you learn your lesson, then you take your test. But in life, you take the test and then you learn your lesson. Have a good day. And I was like, that's so good. That's such a good way to think about it.
Such a good impression. Oh my God. I love that. I love Tony. I love that character. And that
he
is
seems like such
exactly
a cool dude.
What it is. That is exactly how I feel about all things, you know. I don't like to get into super toxic, like everything happens for a reason, like territory. But I do think that, like, going back to the seeing things from like a God's eye view thing a little bit, and a huge part of my spirituality is, you know, acceptance and accepting people as they are, and knowing that when I am critiquing a person, including myself, including Rivka, that I'm actually critiquing the creation of my creator. Like, you know, in general, or creators, like, if, you know, I know a lot of people who do ancestral work, myself included, and my ancestors are a big part of my, you know, spiritual kind of committee of, you know, people who sit on the board of higher powers, including the dominatrix, right? It's also a bunch of my ancestors up there. But yeah, anyway, this is taken such a turn for the for the spiritual God talk, but you know, that's for me at least what recovery has done to me. It's given me an open mind. I don't consider myself to be religious. I do identify as Jewish, and I've been deepening my practice and my Judaism as of very recently. I mean, almost a year now, but. It's I think recovery has like put me in a place where like now I am open to many things. I am open to certain aspects of any religion, you know, as long as it's like based in love and truth with a capital T, and reality with a capital R. And I know a lot of Christian stuff is not based in reality with the capital R. It's like very much heavily based in imperialism, and it sucks. But yeah, for the most part, like I learn my lessons and take my tests and, you know, evaluate. Oh my God. What's literally, what a time we have had. I need to ask you to promote everything you want to promote right now.
Oh, fuck. Okay. So, my album comes out, as of this release. Just look up Left at London on your favorite streaming platforms, except for Amazon Music, or go on Bandcamp, look me up on Bandcamp. I've got vinyl records on my website, and the vinyl record comes with a different bonus track than the digital does. But if you order the vinyl, you get a digital copy, which includes the digital bonus track, and then the vinyl includes the vinyl bonus track. So you're really getting the whole package if you get the vinyls. And there are only 500 being made, I think. But if you don't have a record player and you still want to, like, experience the album, I would say today, as of this episode being released, today, June 4th, as far as I know, is... Yes. Okay, good. I got the thumbs up. It's Bandcamp Friday, which means that all the artists on Bandcamp, get 100% of the profits made off of Bandcamp stuff, which is super important. So, I would say download Tiapfa there, and then check out the credits of Tiapfa and see if there's any names that you're not familiar with, and check them out to see if they're on Bandcamp, because I want everybody involved in this album to feel supported and be supported. And I'm really going to try to make sure that happens. For example, in Kudzu, the song that I sent you, there is a prominent sample of, well, track 3 and track 6 both feature prominent samples of people in my life that I know personally. Alex Anderson from Floral Tattoo and William Crooks. Both of whom are like artists that have really inspired me and really like helped me sort of understand what I wanted to do with my art. So I kind of wanted to just like sample them like directly to sort of like see what I could do like by interpreting their art in a different way. And it ended up working out really well. They both, as far as I know, liked the tracks that I sampled them in. So support Floral Tattoo, support William Crooks, support me, support everybody on the list of credits that I gave earlier. Alongside that, Wow Okay is my band with Robin Holiday Kiss, check us out. We're going to be working on some stuff right after this album releases. Hopefully we've been trying to like they live in Philly, so it's like hard to connect. We're trying our best here. And, so, wow. Okay. Check out the merch site. There's a lot of merch. There's bumper stickers, hoodies, t-shirts. I think I've promoted enough of my stuff, that I can think about.
Yes. And are you at Left at London across, social media?
Every single social media that I can think of, I am amazing. At Left at London on, except for SoundCloud, which I'm Left dash at dash London, which is annoying, but you know,
yeah,
you do what you got.
That's really annoying. No, I'm just kidding. I love that. I love it so much. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a wild ride, very chaotic. How I love it. How I love to be on this very podcast here. Thank you so much. Tune in next week. Okay, bye.
Bye.
That was something fucking else. I am so, so grateful that we got to have Nat, aka Left at London, on. Follow her on all the things at Left at London. Oh my God, I don't know what is happening to me right now, but I am so jazzed for you all to listen to a track off of Tiapfa. Tiapfa? I forgot how to pronounce it. On new. Okay, words are still troublesome for me. I'm grieving. Leave me alone. Please check out this song, Kudzu, from Left at London's Tiapfa.
Yeah.
thank you so much for listening to another episode of Where Are We Now with Rivka Reyes. This show is produced and edited by Reed Pope. The music is produced by Elise Wattman and the graphics are designed by Crystal Cosmos. If you like the show, you can follow us on Instagram at Where Are We Now Pod. If you really like the show, leave us a review and DM us a screenshot on Instagram at Where Are We Now Pod, and I will pull a tarot card for you. I may even give you some tough love. You might need it. If you like the host, oh my God, thank you. You can follow me at Rivka.Reyes on IG and TikTok and at Rivka Reyes on Twitter. This podcast is completely free to listen to, but it is not free to make it, so please consider becoming a part of our Patreon community for early access, ad-free episodes, channeled poems and songs by Rivka, and much, much more. Tiers start at $11.11. You know I love my angel numbers, baby. It's patreon.com/RivkaReyes. And finally, wherever you are, physically, mentally, and spiritually, just know you are deeply loved. Get used to it, babe. See you next week. Bye.